Come Away to the Water, a Spartacus story, written by Leo Brandt and read by Calicuria. This story has been rated mature, has warnings for graphic depictions of violence, major character death, and rape non-con, and contains the relationships Crixus Navia, Agron Nasir, Melita and Emmaus, and Barca Pietros. Navia was born and then lived her whole life. Chapter 1. It was a curious thing that, when Navia had been a child, she had known happiness. Of course, all children are happy enough when they know nothing outside of their small, little worlds. She would play with Diona and Pietros in the kitchen with pots and pans, and Diona's mother, Esulet she was called, one of the kitchen servants, would cluck at them tenderly, warning them not to get underfoot, and then bake 3 extra honey pastries especially for them. Melita was a few years older, and she worked in the kitchens then too. Navia's own mother had worked in the villa, attending the domina, though such words were unknown to the children in those early days. She would be gone long hours throughout the day and night, and crawl on to the thin mattress she shared with her daughter and son when the world was very dark, smelling of the Lady of the House's perfume. When her children would stir, from nightmares or hunger when the house fell in hard times, she would sing softly, lulling them back to sleep, to safe dreams where children ran and played in open fields, running as long and as far as they wished. Sometimes the son of the master of the house would appear at their doorway just as she had dropped down with her children and would summon her again. She would kiss Navia back to sleep and smooth her hand over Pietros's brow and follow her dominus. Her mother was very beautiful, dark of skin and hair, and she walked so gracefully, always one foot perfectly in front of the other, toe to heel. When Navia was alone, as she was so often, she would practice walking in the same way. She was 5 years of age the first time she knew what she was, and learned to be afraid. She and Diona were given white dresses to wear, matching, and Melita looked a bit afraid and sad when she instructed them to follow her up to the villa. The little girls had not spent much time upstairs, and Navia stared at the wonder around her. The house of Badiatus was very rich in those days, when Marius was their champion, and the walls seemed to glitter as though the sun touched them. There were 2 great fans of ostrich plumes laying on the domina's divan, and Melita quietly whispered that when the ladies came into the salon, she and Diona were to keep them cooled with the fans, and not to make any noise. But she smiled kindly, and Navia thought it all a game. They waited for a time, far longer than Navia was used to standing in one spot. Diona also grew impatient. "Are we to—" "Hush," Melita hissed, more curtly than either of the little girls was used to hearing. And finally their purpose presented itself. The domina entered slowly, arm in arm with the younger woman, and they seated themselves on the cushions. Melita moved to bring them food and drink, and she motioned for the little girls to pick up the fans. The younger woman was wearing a gown of green silk, so cool and light and shimmering in the sunlight filtering through the skylight. Navia had never seen such a garment, and neither had Diona. Her friend was mesmerized and reached out a little hand to brush her fingers across the fabric. But Navia knew that would be wrong. "Do not," she began, but then felt a sharp cuff on the back of her head. She had never been struck, and it stilled her for a moment. But Melita caught her eye, all fear, and Navia lifted the fan again. They spent most of their days in the balcony, watching the gladiators train. Marius was cut down soon after Navia had come upstairs, and there was a new champion, stronger, quicker than the rest of the men. He was a large man, black of skin, with one terrible scar across his face that did not diminish how gentle his eyes could be. Navia's heart stopped beating once when she saw her brother, so small on the Ludus sand, stumble into the path of one of the mighty swinging blades, and the new champion stepped in his way, blocking Pietros from harm. And Navia saw the way Melita's eyes followed the man, shining with something that looked like hope. Their Dominus called him Enemaeus. She was 7 when her mother was sold. Pietros was already working in the Ludus, fetching water for the gladiators, and trying to stay very small, hidden, out of any man's line of vision. He was not there when she was taken. He did not get to say goodbye. But then, neither did she. She was waving the fan back and forth near the new lady of the house. Lucretia was her name, and the old Dominus had no love in his heart for his new daughter-in-law. When 3 men came to the villa, Dominus simply pointed. "She's the one." Her mother had been attending to the old Domina, and she was bid to put down the heavy carafe of wine, and the men simply began to carry her off. Navia gasped and opened her mouth to cry out, but she caught herself before she did. Mother turned around, her gaze meeting hers, and with her mouth closed, Navia heard her voice.
"No, stay alive. You are my heartbeat now. Stay alive."
"Girl, I bake in this heat," the old Domina hissed, and Navia resumed moving the fan back and forth, watching the graceful form of her mother growing smaller in the distance, walking heel to toe. Much later, she heard Domina speaking to her husband, who was the only person who seemed to care that her mother was gone.
"What of the children?" he had finally said, anger already starting to ebb. "Who is to look after them now? They should be sent to—"
Before Navia had the chance to gasp in fear, Domina spoke up again, all worry already gone from her mind. "You cannot separate two who have shared a womb. The gods do not look favorably upon such things, even if they are slaves."
"We are children,"
Navia thought,
"and we need our mother."
But her mother had already given her the most precious gift since the time she quickened in her belly, her brother beside her to keep her safe and warm. And he was still hers to keep. It was 2 days before she saw Pietros again. He was already sleeping downstairs, always attending the Ludus, and finally he had to come up to the kitchen on an errand for herbs for the medicus, and Navia seized her opportunity, pulling him back behind the sacks of flour, to where they had hidden his children. He was angry at first, disbelieving her, but as realization dawned, his face, so like her own, crumpled, and Navia put her arms around him, muffling his tears against her shoulder and allowing hers to fall silently. "What will become of us?" he whispered. Someone called his name, and he drew back, wiping his eyes with the backs of his hands. "They will not part us, sister. I will not allow it." And then he was up, running back to his duties. Weeks passed into months, The old Domina died of a gripping sickness that came along suddenly. Navia did not mourn her, but while the rest of the household bowed their heads in prayer to the gods, Navia petitioned her mother's beautiful face.
Stay alive.
Navia and Diona spent most of their days on the balcony with Melita and the new Domina, who was fashioning herself as the lady of the house with ease. She watched her brother on the sands, but he could not lift his eyes to her many days. He always had to be watching the gladiators.
What will become of us?
Esculent's people were Celts, and she remembered some of the older stories, and a few words of the old language. Do you know where my mother came from? Navia asked once, and the woman shook her head, smiling sadly. She was born in Capua, and never said where her people came from before that. Esculent's voice went softer, and she patted Navia's arm kindly. I think that she did not know. Navia turned away so that Esculent would not see tears form. It was such a small thing that did not matter. It would never bring her mother back. She was busier in those days, with more tasks and responsibilities, and did not know when she would have another moment alone with Esculent to ask such a question. Please, did you ever know of her father? Navia's voice was near a whisper. Esculent's face went softer yet. He was a gladiator, sold to a Lanista of Sicilia before you were born. He was an honorable man, Navia. But Dominus favored your mother, and he would not have shared her attentions. It was one more thing that she did not have. Months passed into years, and Navia and Diona grew, side by side. Melita led them by example and kept them out of trouble, out of the Domina's line of notice. She showed them the proper way to serve at meals, taking care that they left no detail unpolished. Though Navia was somewhat pleased at the increase in her responsibilities, she was unsure why Melita would be absent from the supper service. It's only for one night, and then... Melita blushed and stopped herself, smiling at the two younger girls. I am to be the wife of Enemaeus. Navia and Diona glanced at each other. They had never heard of such a thing. Melita continued, her eyes downcast. It's a great honor the Dominus afforded him, for his victory against Neoxys. There has never been such a champion. He was told he could have a house, or riches. He asked to take a wife. Did you know to expect this? Diona asked, breathless. She reached out a hand to join with Navia's and squeezed. Navia squeezed back. Melita was thoughtful for a long moment, her eyes shining. Navia could see her happiness. It was a palpable thing. He has been kind to me, and most importantly, I was given a choice. No, I never dared hope, but such a blessing. And she reached her arms out to pull the two girls into her. Sometimes the gods do listen. 3 nights after, Navia and Diona shared the duty of supper service while Melita was married to Enemaeus in the manor of the Numidians. The gladiators were in attendance, so Navia made a point to ask Pietros all that he saw the next time they were together. Sister, did you see Barca's victory against Phidias' pig? Oh, he sent that fuck to the afterlife properly! Pietros was smiling and laughing despite his bloodthirsty words, and he ran to her, lifting her in his arms, so much larger and stronger than she remembered him. Brother, shush! Someone will hear! Navia could not help but smile, even as she scolded him. It had been so long since she had been able to touch him. He seemed to have forgotten his years in the villa, allowing his bare feet to slap loudly on the floor instead of being silent, and he smelled of the sand and the men. What is your purpose away from the Ludus? Stale bread. Do you have any you can spare from the kitchens?
Of course, but...
She cocked her head in surprise at the strange request. What could you possibly...
It's for Barca and Octus, her brother answered, and she did not miss the way his eyes lit when he said the name of the man called the Beast of Carthage in the arena.
They keep doves, and I said I would help.
Navia laughed to herself as she wrapped the bread in a length of coarse cloth.
It does me good to see you, brother.
He cupped her face in one hand and kissed her brow.
I told you once, they will never part us forever. But for the moment,
Navia smiled back. Go.
And she was still smiling as she heard him singing to himself, the song she often heard late at night from the Ludus after a victory of the Brotherhood.
My cock rages on, my cock rages on.
Navia and Diona attended the Domina on the balcony when the new recruits were brought in. Navia did not favor it. She had already seen too many men go to game and never return from the arena. It was not worth learning names, and always seeing Melito cringe with fear when Enemaeus went off to fight. The men were always filthy, brought in from a slave ship in Neapolis, or bought at auction in Capua, after a long, weary road. The stench reached them on the balcony, but Navia didn't dare look away. Some men were already dead. She could see it in the slump of their shoulders. No fight, no will. Others were defiant, cursing out at Doctore, and ready to run the moment they were unshackled. There was a Celt who had to be wrestled down by three guards, and even after Doctore's whip lashed out at him, he screamed,
"Take Rasnard, Fain!"
Diona gasped at Navia's side as she heard her mother's language. He was from a Brittany tribe.
Quintus, he will never be of any use, Domina mused. Send him to the mines at once.
But Dominus shook his head, swilling another cup of wine and motioning for Melita to bring him another.
No, a fire like that can't just be passed by. We'll give a chance to that beast, to see if he can be tamed to our will.
He called down to Doctore.
What do you call that Celtic shit?
Speak!
Doctore barked at the Celt, who only grunted and snarled. It was Enemaeus who stepped forth from the Brotherhood. No others dared to incur Doctore's wrath, and very few ever took pity on new recruits who had not yet proved themselves. Navia could see Pietros peer from behind Barca and Octus. He went to the man, towering over him as he spoke gently. Then he turned back to the balcony, first smiling at his wife, before addressing the Dominus. He is called Gannicus. Gannicus was tamed to their Dominus as well, soon rising to only second in the Ludus behind Enemaeus. Melita spent one night in seven below stairs with her man. When she returned the next morning, always with a faraway smile on her face, Diona pestered her with questions of Gannicus, the Dimochorus Celt who would not be defeated, and always greeted his opponent with a smile. Apollo come to Earth.
Did you see him this time, Melita? She asked breathlessly.
Sometimes Gannicus offered such a smile up to the balcony, and Navia would see how Diona would blush prettily. And Melita would always laugh.
Yes, he is forever at my husband's side.
It did not escape Navia's notice, the high point of pride in Melita's voice to call her man, husband. She brushed back a strand of soft brown hair from Diona's brow.
Little flower, there is more than enough time for you. Put Gannicus far from your thoughts for at least a few more years.
And she would walk away, humming to herself, while Diona and Navia shared a quiet giggle between themselves before Esulet called them back to the kitchen. Pietros was only allowed into the villa every so often, to pick up herbs, or sometimes to fetch Dominus when he was needed in the Ludus. But he had slept below stairs for many years, so Navia was quite surprised to see him when she was sent to the kitchens for a glass of water for Domino well past midnight.
"Brother," she called softly to his back.
His form stilled, and he looked over his shoulder. With a few quick strides, she was at his side.
What happened? Are you hurt?
She did not know at the time why she asked the question, as he had no visible injury. But in his eyes, she could see. Yes, he had been hurt. Perhaps irreparably. It was in his slow, pained gait, nothing like his usual free and easy movement. The slump of his shoulders, the bow of his head. She reached a hand to comfort him, and he winced away.
Don't. I must be filthy. I must go wash.
He was speaking as though in his own head, as if he did not know her. But then he lifted his eyes to hers. Sister, what has become of us? Since they were children, Esulet had looked after all of them, Navia as well as her own Diona, and Melita and Pietros as best she could. She gently steered them away from punishment, and tried to protect them from their own dreams. Navia would watch her with Diona at times, and close her eyes, and try to imagine her own mother's arms around her once more.
Stay alive.
She could still hear her mother's voice in her ear. Esulet was all of their strength, and Navia didn't know of a world without her. There had never been such a fever as that in the villa, 6 afflicted overnight and 2 dead by morning. By the 3rd day, only Esulet remained. She burned with fever and murmured incoherency to Diona, feebly trying to push her away.
Go,
she whispered with ragged breath.
Go.
But Diona would not leave her side, and Navia stood behind her. The Dominus and Domina had left the Ludus in fear, taking Melita with them. She had sobbed when she said goodbye to the girls, and the gladiators were gone too. Dominus would not risk their health, not from illness, anyway. Pietros was taken too, to water the horses.
They won't part us, sister. I won't allow it.
He looked behind him as Navia watched them all leave the house. 100 slaves in the great Batiatis family, leaving 2 little girls to tend the sick. And to bury the dead. Celts did not burn. Diona knew this. Her mother had told her. Navia wondered if she was preparing her daughter to one day be without her, to carry on her ways. Diona was still small enough to slip through the gate, and she climbed up and opened the lock so that Navia could open the door, and together they carried Esulet from the house of Batiatis. She was buried in a white shroud, with bread and a carving knife to see her to the other side. Diona had found a flat, shining stone when she was a little girl, and they had played with it, calling it the Hidden Jewel. She buried this, too, with her mother. The shovels were heavy, and the sun was on its descent by the time they had laid Esulet to rest, and Navia walked Diona back to the Ludus, cradling her around the waist. They were all alone in the world. The Domina had told them that the family would be back in a month's time, and that they were expected to behave. She did not worry that they would run away. 2 small girls who had seen nothing of the world had nowhere to go. You are all I have, Diona finally said, very late that night, as they sat on the Ludus floor under the stars, listened to the waves crash on the cliffs far below. We are as one, Navia. You are my whole world. Navia put her arms around the other girl and squeezed tight. The house was still, waiting with bated breath. Enemaeus had fallen to Theocles. Enemaeus, the gladiator. Enemaeus, the slave. The house of Batiatis depended on him. All would fall to ruin without his strong hand to hold them to position. Melita had been inconsolable the night they brought him home, She cried out, screamed to her gods, to whom she prayed with all she had to offer every evening. Why were they forsaken? Not him! Do not take him! Not him! And Navia whispered the only prayer she had ever known.
Stay alive. Stay alive. Stay alive. Stay alive. Stay alive. Stay alive.
And he did. Little by little, his breathing grew easier, and finally he opened up his eyes and formed the name Melita with his mouth. She was brought to him, weeping in gratitude. When they were alone again, Diona turned to Navia to whisper in her ear, "Will Enemaeus fight again?" "I do not know, sister." Diona was quiet for a long time, lost in her thoughts. "He is a good man. He loves Melita, truly loves her." Navia nodded, even though it was quite dark and Diona couldn't see her. "But still," she paused, "he will never be champion again." Navia nodded again. "Ganicus will rise." At this, Navia had to smile fondly. The Celt was never far from Diona's thoughts. In fact, he seemed to preoccupy her more as the years passed. "Enemaeus was offered a wife when he became champion. Maybe Ganicus will be offered the same." And Navia laughed softly. Their dreams were so fragile, and it did no harm to hope. As Diona's breathing evened out and she slept, Navia turned her thoughts back to Melita and Enemaeus.
Stay alive.
"How I envy your youth!" The woman called Gaia laughed gently, the sound a musical tinkling, but Navia shivered and clenched fists at her side when the woman reached out to caress the softness of Diona's cheek. Her kindness cloaked in evil. Of that, Navia was sure, and she steeled her ears against the sound of her voice. When the woman sauntered back into the shaded cool of the villa, Diona peeked over the railing to get one last look at Ganicus, as she always did. Before Navia ran off to follow them, she too looked over the railing, once more at the Gaul Gaia had taken such an interest in. With long, curly hair flying about him as he thrust his sword, he looked more beast than man. Enemaeus schooled him strictly, and his back was on the Luda sand more than he stood upright. But he kept rising to his feet. When the woman called Gaia held his fate in her hands, to let him live or die, Navia found herself holding her breath, waiting for the answer. And when life was granted, she exhaled in relief. None was right with Melita. She had been withdrawn and anxious for days, distracted from task, and Navia had more than once seen her wiping tear from her eyes. In a quiet moment, she moved to ask her sister if she could help, but Melita sent her off to another task, keeping her troubles a mystery. There was no humming or faraway smile when she returned from nights in her husband's arms, turning away when Diona asked her usual questions of Ganicus. The woman called Gaia's tinkling laughter rang softly in every corner of the house, and Navia knew that the woman had brought evil with her. And Diona, her dreams of Ganicus had been dusted with starlight and scented with flower petals. All came crashing down as the chill moved over them, when they were commanded to remove their robes by their domina. Navia reached a hand to her sister, forcing the other to stay at her side, no matter how she longed to cover herself, and to follow Diona where the Roman man led her away. How she longed to follow her, how she longed to not be separated. When Navia found her brother in the kitchen, he seemed to know at once what had happened.
"Thank the gods,"
he exhaled sharply, and she looked at him aghast. I would not wish such a thing on Diona. She has never done anyone harm. But you remain untouched and safe. There is no greater wish in my heart, dear sister. At Domina's party, when Navia glimpsed the full extent of what Diona's role to play in the Ludus now was, she could not tear her eyes away. Every thrust and grunt seemed to breathe down her own back. Diona had always said they were as one, and no matter what, Navia could not, would not, be separated from anyone else she loved. But then Diona looked away, shielding her face, and Navia's heart fell. She was losing Diona, all choice removed from the matter, as always. An empty jug of wine was thrust in her hands, and Navia looked quickly to Melita's solemn gaze. See this to the pantry, and remain there until I call upon you. Each word was weighted with purpose, and the words she did not speak rang in Navia's ear.
Stay alive.
Such pretty cheeks. That was what Gannicus had said to Diona when the whole of the household had been presented to celebrate his victory against Stagmates in the arena. She had leaned forward, tightly squeezing Navia's hand, and when her idol called out to her, over his shoulder, her cheeks had colored to a more blushing pink. Diona had walked on air for a week afterwards, always with a faint smile on her lips. That had been not so long ago, but how the world had changed in the interim. It had been weeks since Navia had seen Diona's smile, and her cheeks were no longer that lovely shade of pink, but a stark white. The woman called Gaia had been spirited away from this place, but her ghost lingered, past deeds haunting Diona and placing Domina under a veil of mourning. Navia watched Domina, genuine sadness creasing her face. She could not feel anything for her. Her sadness, her pain meant nothing. Domina, who had seen her mother sold, who had given Diona's smile over to cruelty. But Melita spoke to her in hushed, gentle tones, promising to preserve the memory of Gaia, and even enlisting Navia and Diona's obedience in the matter. Navia stilled behind them as Melita comforted Domina. Melita, who along with Diona, had seemed to fade by the day since Gaia had come into their lives. Navia felt her toe softly bump against something heavy and solid, and looked down to see a small satchel filled with Roman coin. She looked back to Melita, who still bowed to the hand which beat her. She, Navia, would not. And for Diona, there would be more than staying alive. Pietros always seemed to know when she really, truly needed him, and would come to her in secret, in their childhood hiding spot, as soon as he was able. Navia waited for him there, biting her lip until it bled to hold back her sobs. She was not missed. The house was swayed to the bedside of the man who had died upstairs, with very few giving thought to the woman who passed below. Sister. His voice was shaking, and Navia fell to his arms, grateful she would not have to say the words. Melita, gone, he cried, and then repeated it twice more. And Diona. Navia held him tighter. She had not burdened him with her secret, and she would not, either.
Stay alive.
She had never prayed so hard before, for her mother, or an Emmaus, or even her dear brother, as she did for her sweet friend, alone in the world. Diona had always been quick and small, easy to escape notice. She had often slipped through the gates undetected, to visit her mother's resting spot, but always came back for Navia.
Stay alive.
Navia pulled Pietros into her and drew on his energy. Gone. Gone. She repeated, the words finally giving way to tears she had held since watching her mother walk away from the Ludus, toe to heel. Brother, you are my whole world now. What will become of us? It was Melita's cloak. That was all Navia could think of when Domina pointed to it, told her to put it on. The garment was finer than any other she had ever worn, and still held Melita's scent of rosemary oil and lemons. And Emmaus, Doctore, had looked at her sharply when she emerged from the villa behind Domina, and she lowered her gaze, unable to face him. The freshly tattooed mark upon her back still stung every time the cloth fell against it. It was Diona who had always wanted to see the games, who had watched the arena grow, stone by stone, with wonder from the balcony in the villa. And it was Diona who would tell Navia all about the glory Ganicus would achieve within, and then Melita would call them back inside, back to work. And now she, Navia, was the only one left. Navia looked over the crowds from the vantage point of the Pulvinus, the crowds screaming for blood, nearly shaking the wooden beams of the stadium in their excitement. But all Navia could hear was the crack of the whip as slaves brought stone to build foundations. The Mermillo, the Gaul, he had been such a stone hauler. Navia was certain she had heard that.
Navia. Navia.
The hairs on the back of her neck stood up. Navia had heard her mother's voice in her ear, at times over the years when she had felt most lost, but always in a quiet moment.
Navia.
It came again, more insistent, and as she allowed herself to look to the sand, she felt her mother reach with icy fingers to keep her from crying out. Diona was bloodied and battered. If she had indeed been branded fugitivus, as she had feared, Navia could not see for her wounds. She knew the moment she was seen, the moment Diona felt her presence, and shared her fear, her wild, desperate grief, and her resignation.
You are my whole world. We are as one.
Navia was a fool. There was no safe place in this world for a little slave girl.
Navia.
Melita's voice in her ear, and the Nesulet's.
Send her to me.
Navia looked back to Diona on the sand, holding her gaze and her friend's last plea.
Stay alive.
Navia answered just before the blade robbed life from the pretty little Celt girl with the loveliest pink cheeks.
Be free.
Much of Navia's life was nothing. She attended Domina. She stood. She poured wine. She stood. She got into the bath with her, and out of the bath with her, and then she stood. She stood in the bedchamber when Domina laid with her husband, listened to his rough words, his hoarse cries, and forced herself not to look away. She was not to look away, but she was not to see, either. And she was to be seen by nobody. Her life was filled with nothing. Sometimes Domina would have one of the other girls pleasure Dominus with hand or mouth before they coupled, and though it shocked Navia at first, she stopped being afraid of it after a time. Though it was not an easy thing to turn her eyes from the girls sent in from the kitchen or the gardens to perform this task. Hand! Domina would reach for Navia's palm, and she moved between her thighs without any more prompting. Domina had little patience for Navia's timid touch the first time she was made to pleasure her, and after a few sharp strokes across her neck, Navia learned to shut off her mind, her thoughts, the voices she heard, and moved herself to stay alive, whatever the cost. It was not what Diona or Melita had endured, and she would not allow herself to be broken. She was the last of them left. She lived for them. She had been with Emmaus when he saw Melita's ashes below ground, so close to where Esulet had been laid to rest. She hoped they brought comfort to each other, and she hadn't heard their voices since the day of the games. As for Diona, Navia had sent all of her thoughts and wishes along with Ganicus, that she might follow him and see the world from his point of view, the way she always wanted. He was the only slave she had ever known to win his freedom, and he needed a good, gentle spirit to guide him. And Domina kept her promise. Navia attended her only, and so long as she stayed by her side, she was in no danger. So many times, she and her brother had asked each other what was to become of them, and now Navia knew the answer. If a slave was to stay alive, she must close her mind and not be seen. Live a life of nothing. Sometimes days, or even weeks would go by before she saw Pietros again. It was different in this life afterwards, of course. She could not slip away so easily as she could when she had Melita and Diona to share the world. But even apart from her own difficulties, Pietros would not always come at every chance he had. She did not blame him, or find fault with him. He managed to find a shred of happiness and hope in this place which had taken so much from them. And under the protection of the Beast of Carthage, she worried less for the brother who seemed so far away from her. And yet, her heart missed him, missed all of the comforts of sharing her thoughts and fears with him, with anyone. He was all that she had left. They were still connected, as they were as children, but she only had him by half, if that. And yet she could not begrudge him his love, could not feel jealousy of Barca when she knew all too well how fleeting any happiness might be in this place. Sometimes he would lift his eyes to meet hers from the lotus floor, when she stood on the cool balcony in the shade. "You are my whole world," she would think, smiling down at him. And he would smile back, and she knew that he heard her words. "Bring me the gall." Like so many things when she first came to be a body slave, Navia did not understand this command at first, but learned quickly. And attending the games with Domina had helped her to learn the names of the men, which were Gauls or Numidians, which were Mermillo and Hoplomachus. There were many Gauls at the Ludus, most who fought in the style of Cestus, but when Domina made such a request, Navia knew there was only one she sought. On days or some late nights when Dominus had business that called him away from the Ludus, Domina would send for Crixus, the new champion of Capua. It was normally the call of Navia to secret him upstairs and through the villa to Domina's bedchamber. At first, Navia was pleased with this task, thinking in this way she might be able to steal a glimpse of her brother as she waited by the gate, but that seldom occurred. The champion was a smaller man up close, much smaller than he appeared in the arena, though Navia had seen what he could do with a sword and shield. But yet, it was a thing of note to see the man before her, as a man, and not the god who thirsted for blood on the sands. Sometimes, when they reached the bedchamber, she could feel him still beside her, and would look over her shoulder to meet his gaze. He watched her in a curious way. He saw her. Lamiakai, he asked, his voice low and startling. She turned to see his eyes curiously dark and wondering.
Apologies?
The scent. I recall it from the fields when I was a child. She found herself struck, thinking of the champion of Capua as a boy. It was hardly enough to consider him a man. The oils, they held healing powers, and... the bath oils. Navia had the responsibility of bathing Domina, a small kindness that allowed her also to be clean. He was studying her closely, and leaned in even nearer, breathing deep. But she was to be seen by nobody, and she drew back the curtain once again. Domina awaits.